Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's always a fun episode when my buddy David Castillo joins us. Welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Thank you guys for rolling with us during this off season. Lots of programs this week and next as we just continue providing you content. And all I ask is you press that subscribe button or just tell another Stars fan that Spits and Suds is the program for you and get them to listen as we try to expand this thing even more and even bigger through 2026 and into 2027. We'll get to David in just a moment. Want to talk about the on-time experts. I feel like I'm talking about them daily, and that's because I am, because I'm raving about my friends at the on-time experts. I was going down, 6:35 the other day, and I saw the on-time experts truck, and I started pumping my fist. They must think I'm crazy as they look at me pumping my fist at them, because I'm excited because someone else is going to be a customer for life. Someone else is trying out the on-time experts, your official HVAC company of the Dallas Stars and of Spits and Suds. If you've been to the American Airlines Center, you see the Zamboni on the ice. It says the on-time experts. You see the ribbon around the AAC with that bright orange. It says the on-time experts. And of course, the scoreboard. And they are the official HVAC and plumbing company right here of Spits and Suds. I've used them both for plumbing and for my HVAC, and I'm excited for both. You know what? My AC is clicking on more and more, and it's getting colder faster in my house because I know the on-time experts did that deep cleaning. They got rid of the dirt. They got rid of the grime. They got rid of the dust. Those are all found in your attic, and they took care of it. So I took advantage of that, and you shall as well. $59 for first-time customers. $99 first floor drain cleaning special. Please support the on-time experts at theontimeexperts.com. Same-day service guaranteed. Tell them Spits and Suds sent you. and the author of the Substack, Star Stack. He also writes for D Magazine. David Castillo joins us. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm excited that Greg might be awesome enough to keep in those two blown intros that just got cut.
And he will not, and that's very cruel of you. That is very cruel of you. Oh, you know what? Let's do it. We did it before. Let's do it again. All right. For those of you that want to hear me screw up, here is Gregory Finley throwing me under the bus with my first screw up of intro. It's always an adventure when we have David Castillo joining us as our co-host. So great to hear from you today. Oh. All right, here we go. I try to be original. There you go, David.
I mean, you did not need to do that. I mean, I was just, listen, I think everything you do is awesome. I think that was your version of like my typos, which are very frequent. So I'm not one to talk, man. Some of the typos, not just typos, but like write in that I'm genuinely like embarrassed and feel like is cringe at times. So,
well,
that was so quick. Like, yep, he's telling the truth. And man, I've seen it before. Woo, that is awesome. I don't know how the guy gets paid.
Well, I want everyone to support my man, David Castillo, with his Substack, Stars Stack. We'll talk about Jason Robertson. David has some interesting thoughts. He did a deep dive on the value of Jason Robertson. Should he get traded or not? So we'll talk about that. I feel like it's a daily issue, but that's because he's so important to the franchise, and it's a massive decision for the Dallas Stars. But with the news coming out that another coach has been let go, Vancouver moving on from Adam Foote after just 1 year. Boy, lots and lots of coaching vacancies. We now have vacancies in Los Angeles with the Kings. We have it with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We have it with the Edmonton Oilers and now the Vancouver Canucks. And as of right now, David, Bruce Cassidy still not allowed to speak to anyone. Be interesting if Toronto asked, because they are an East Coast team. So that might give Vegas a chance to change their mind. But wanted to get your thoughts on a guy like Adam Foote and just overall in general, the kind of quick turn style of the NHL coaching. I just feel like, I don't know, I feel as though Edmonton, but I guess if you have Connor McDavid on a short window, but the Chris Knobloch firing, that was McDavid's guy. Just a lot of turnover in the NHL.
I think that comes with the sort of what I think, for me at least, I feel like a lot of this comes from just the structure of the old boys club. As in, you have a lot of like GMs that they have these people in mind, like from Jump Street. People they like, people that have been around the game for a long time, like Adam Foote. And so it's never fully, you rarely see a general manager that is in sync with the coach and roster they're given. And so this is why, like, the situation with Chris McFarlane and Jaron Bednar in like Colorado is such an anomaly, or like John Cooper in Tampa Bay. You just don't really get this anymore. And I think it's because like a lot of times, for whatever reason, like coaches are just not on the same page. They don't seem to give prospects the leeway they deserve, or certain players that just they don't like. I mean, we saw this with, you know, Dallas and Gullitson, which, by the way, like, that's not a criticism of Gullitson. Like, he was great with the young players, deserves a lot of credit. That never gets kind of mentioned enough. But, you know, the weird treatment of Michael Bunting, right? Like, you know, as an example. And so it's not really that surprising to me when there seems to be such a lack of communication into, like, whether or not a GM is on the same page with their coach.
Right.
And I thought Adam Foote was a great example. Some of it, like, Foote was just, I thought, you know, apologies for being a jerk, I thought it was just awful. Like, I don't kind of like Greg Cronin in Anaheim. Like, I'm like, as much as I hate to say it, it's kind of like, how did you get this job? You know, like, what? I mean, yes, you play the game. I'm sure your knowledge of hockey is extensive, but like his coaching, like the way they tried to play the game, this was like just one of the worst teams in the analytics era. And also, he was playing Brock Besser more minutes than any other forward. Now, you could say, like, well, Elias Pettersson's not really that good. Garland, Rossi, et cetera. Like, sure, Besser is not better than those players, though. Cassidy, as we know, tends to rub players the wrong way and tends to outlive his shelf, or tends to not outlive his shelf life. And so, I feel like this is sort of there's always a hockey reason for why this is. And I feel like it's because coaches aren't necessarily hired for hockey reasons in connection with the roster that can be maximized to suit either the system or the tactics that they have in mind.
Yeah, I just feel as though I understand what you're saying, and I think Vancouver has a lot of talent.
What?
I do. I really do. I really do. I like that. I like Rossi a lot. I like Bulliam. I like Besser. I like these guys. So I don't think they're that far off. I mean, people think I'm wrong, but I don't know. I mean, the same guy that picked Anaheim and Buffalo. Remember that. In Utah. Remember that, Castillo. All right.
I think that is a wild take. I think they could get there, but I think my biggest issue with Vancouver is that they don't have a deep prospect pool. Like, how do you tank? How do you be a terrible team at the NHL level and not have a bunch of good prospects on the way? Like, other than Willander, there's just nothing, man. That's the tough part. Like, they need to make this upcoming draft hit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Connor Garland, I like him a lot too. So, but I'm just saying, like, I understand what you're saying about Adam Foote. I just think, you know, it was a quick trigger when your general manager got rid of, you know, your best player. And there was a lot of things going on in Vancouver. You know, someone just needs to go in and stabilize that organization. And I just don't know if it's possible. All right. We haven't had you on since Knobloch was let go. Do you think that was the right move for Edmonton?
I do. I don't think Knobloch was like, I don't think he was a bad coach, but sometimes like I think you can sort of, it's not necessarily about a coach being like bad, but just like being bad in this situation, right? I mean, you can't have a bad coach in a year where a team is trying to win it all. Whether you think, you know, Edmonton could have got there, you know, the weird like passive aggressiveness from his own players, who I don't think were really throwing him under the bus, at least intentionally, but that's kind of what happens, right? It doesn't really matter what the intentions were. You know, it's easy enough to kind of read the room here in terms of Knobloch, you know, clearly just wasn't getting it done. And yes, a lot of this has to do with, you know, for example, excuse me, like the year that Walman had the sort of continued decline of Darnell Nurse, and even to a lesser extent, Ekholm. And some of the kind of erratic play as with Evan Bouchard, who I think kind of gets maybe some undue criticism because he's such an offensive-minded defenseman. His decision-making can look a little goofy at times, but I feel like it was a combination of the roster didn't really have it, but also Knobloch didn't know what buttons to press and kind of found his chemistries way too late. So I think they screwed up when they got rid of Woodcroft. I thought Woodcroft was actually like a pretty good coach, and them panicking after that losing streak where the kind of numbers revealed that they weren't that bad, I think is kind of where it all maybe started. Not a whole lot to say about Knobloch. I think he's the kind of guy that's probably going to need the Gullitson treatment, where he just kind of becomes an assistant coach elsewhere and then eventually kind of works his way back.
Well, the reason I asked that is because this is a Stars focused podcast, and you know, Knobloch, good or bad, I mean, took them to two straight cups. They didn't win. And then the disappointing exit this year. But I guess the question becomes then, like, how long of a leash does Glenn Gullitson and his staff have?
Ooh, man, we're having the Gullitson discussion already. I think
I'm just asking. I personally, you and I might disagree. I actually thought Glenn Gullitzen did a nice job working with the young guys. I thought he maintained the room well. I think the players really like him. You know, I think they ran into a hot Minnesota team, and you know, it's unfortunate, but I didn't put it all on Gullitzen or Neil Graham or, you know, the coaching staff in general. I didn't put it on anyone. I just thought they got beat by Minnesota.
When I wrote my preview, one of the things that like I wrote at the end is that I felt like it would always be unfair to judge, to judge Gullitzen and Dallas for a potential first round exit. So for those who don't know, or, you know, cause I didn't know it was for paid subscribers, but like I did pick Minnesota to win that series, did a deep dive into kind of everything, how the teams matched up on the cycle and the rush in transition, et cetera, and I just felt like with the injuries, I didn't think Dallas would have enough. And I think the main thing too was also that like, well, listen, it is hard to go far in the playoffs in the NHL. And so even if Dallas had kept DeBoer, it still would have been a very, very tough thing to do to be like, to go on another deep run, just based on the numbers and also based on their opponent. Like, you know, this was not the Minnesota team from 5 years ago or 3 years ago. And so they were always going to be a tough matchup. So I agree that Dallas being judged for a first round exit, you know, it's like, you know, judging Colorado last year for a first round exit or Tampa Bay this year. I mean, the team's still really good. The only thing I would say about Gullitzen is, and it's something I've been writing about, you know, quite a bit at the Star Stack, is that I think he deserves a lot of credit for not just working with the young players, but also the defense, right? So, you know, this is a team that was 23rd in scoring chances against last season under DeBoer versus sixth this season. That's just for minutes, right? So the defense was night and day. And I think that is to his credit. But I'm still of two minds because Gullitzen also had a lot of time to monitor the even strength scoring and the way they attack and, you know, also tinkering with maybe like different combinations so that if the system couldn't kind of help generate more offense, then maybe like different combinations could. And that's something that he absolutely struggled with. It's something that he didn't do well. And even though they did pretty well with generating chances, even strength, again, this was a team, I don't know if for those that saw the list, right? And this is just for minutes. In the first round, not a single Dallas star forward cracked the top 20 in chances off the rush, off the cycle, or on the forecheck. Like, that is a systems problem. So for me, the real X factor going into next season, and one of the reasons why I feel like Dallas can keep the core and can remain competitive, which is if Gullitzen can find a way to generate more offense. If he can get the team to attack, either they don't have to be a rush-based team. They just need to find ways to generate offense that isn't about like dumping the puck in. And so I think it's going to be – the time will tell. I think this the next season will tell us whether or not Gullitzen can find that answer for their even strength problem, because even though I don't think it was necessarily a problem in that series, it would have been in another series because it was all year.
Yeah, I think those are some really, really interesting points. And I think – I wonder, David, from a crowd frustration standpoint, running it back again, having a successful regular season – getting into the playoffs and struggling in the playoffs again. I just wonder about the fan base because the expectations were high, maybe too high, because now the fan base has enlarged over the years and people were used to making the Western Conference Finals. But this year saw, to me, a lot of disappointment. I don't know if enough was put into how good Minnesota was. And that's why Bill Guerin's a Jim Gregory finalist for GM of the year. But I find that interesting, you know, how the fan base will react during the regular season and what are the expectations moving forward if they run it back for another year?
Well, I think the expectations are for them to make a deep run again, because I think that's where this team belongs. I mean, I do think that, and like I said, this is the thing that I kind of don't really like kind of going to, which is kind of the excuses, the injuries and things like that. But it is a reality. I mean, it's not like you look at the teams remaining, right? Montreal, Carolina, Colorado and Vegas. Any one of their major stars injured right now? Well, I guess Mark Stone has kind of like suffered for the most part, though, right? For the most part, they've had their health. And that's part of what makes the Stanley Cup such a challenge, which is that it's not a skills test. It's not even a hockey test. It's an endurance test. And so I think next season is really, as long as Dallas is healthy, expectations should be high, because I think they're a talented team. I think they're one of the best teams in the league. But that depends on how much coaching can adjust the system, maximize it, get more offense out of it. You know, the thing that I, you know, people seem to kind of forget is that Dallas was the second best team on the Rush in the last season under DeBoer. Now, they sacrificed a lot of defense to do that, but the point is, like, virtually the same roster the previous season was able to attack off the Rush. So I don't buy for a second that Gullitson can't craft ways to get Dallas to attack more. And so I feel like there's the coaching aspect, and then there's also, well, you know, does Jim Neal have anything up his sleeve? Is there, and maybe like, will the health of the team allow Gullitson to kind of maybe tinker with different combinations? Obviously, like Hintz, a player that adds speed. Sagan, not as fast as he was, but he's faster than some of the bottom six guys that were playing.
Those are two good adds.
Yeah. And that's not counting. I mean, this is like, again, I'm not going to die on this hill, but I did write about him last week. My personal hot take is that I think Emil Hemming is going to make the NHL roster next.
Wow.
He's a player that he's a prospect that I've been a little critical of, especially his post-draft year, because yes, he was a late first round pick. Nonetheless, I mean, there's a reason why you pick these guys in the first round. And typically it's because they have the track record to indicate that there's real NHL potential. And so I didn't really see it his post-draft year, but he had a really good second half. And I was like, okay, all right, you know what? Barry, they play this really weird old school style, which is not at all amenable to a forward prospect that's, you know, primarily a shooter. So I'm going to keep the faith just this once, and I'll give him till next season. Sure enough, he missed games due to an injury, but he was 90 point pace for a guy that plays on the first power play unit and the first penalty killing unit. That's extremely impressive, and scored 15 goals in the playoffs. Like, he was dynamite. And man, talk about a team that could use some speed in the bottom six. I'm just saying, like, wow. I think the stars are aligned for Hemming to actually make the team next season.
That is hotter than my Vancouver take. Absolutely.
What's so hot about your, I don't.
I'm not saying Vancouver's going to make the playoffs. I think they can be much improved, but you said you disagreed with that take.
I see
Hemming. Even if he has a great preseason, I see them sticking him in Texas based on the fact that he was with Texas the first time. And I think they want to see it in Texas first.
They'll see it.
Okay. I still think he goes to Texas. I think this organization, I'm going to contradict myself by mentioning Wyatt Johnston, but I think they slow play prospects, and I think they want them to get rid of some of that green in Texas first. They did it with Stankoven. They did it with Bork. They did it with Bischel. So I think personally they'll stash him in Texas, give him quality first line minutes. And if he thrives, I absolutely could see him up in Dallas via injury, but I just don't see him making the jump.
Let me just say that appetite is going to change when they see their bottom six forwards not go goalless through the first 20 games.
Well, it depends how low Michael Bunting wants to resign for.
Oh, yeah, that's always a possibility. I mean, based on how Gullison treated him, I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too.
But
still. I doubt it too. He did have great things to say about the organization in his exit interview. I mean, what are they going to say? But he, yeah, but I like the way you're thinking, because I do think Hemming would be something different. Here's my
quick
thing.
Hold on. Let me add, okay. Yes. Hold on to that thought, but I just want to ask you a question, right?
Yeah.
Gavin, what is a common denominator for the four remaining teams when you look at their bottom six?
Well, it's a common denominator in most Final Fours in the NHL year after year, whereas everyone makes fun of me for third and fourth line, me talking about it. But it seems as though third and fourth liners come up massive in the NHL playoffs. They all score and they take the pressure off that first line scoring. Carolina is a great example of that. And granted, it's not the third or fourth line, but that Taylor Hall, Stankoven, you know, that's alleviating a lot of pressure because they're getting depth scoring. The teams that are moving on are getting depth scoring. Am I right on that? That's what you're where you were going?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, not only that, but also, you know, you look at someone like Alex Newhook. Alex Newhook was freaking bottom six dude. He has what, like 8 goals, 7 goals? I can't remember how many goals.
And terrific.
Yeah, ton of scoring. Like, I mean, and it's not just that, but like a lot of these players, you know, if you're watching the Colorado series, right? Jack Drury did extremely well against Minnesota's top line. He didn't play a ton of minutes, but they weren't afraid to put guys like Parker Kelly, Logan O'Connor, and Jack Drury, like the fourth line, against them, and they didn't get crushed. In fact, they tilted the ice. I mean, you need not just some guys who can chip in, but if they, in lieu of that, certainly the ability to control territory or tilt ice or possess the puck. Dallas didn't have that at all. And so someone like Hemming, again, like perfect profile for a player like those that you're seeing in Carolina and Colorado. I would say Vegas, but not really. Vegas, actually, the reason why I think Colorado is going to be Vegas is that Vegas doesn't have a bottom six scoring.
Yeah, no, I agree. And for those that don't know, Drury was part of the Mikko Rantanen trade to Carolina. Everyone's talking about Martin Natchez, but on Spits and Suds that night when we talked about the trade, I talked about Drury being a good bottom third, fourth liner and what he can contribute in multiple ways. And we're seeing it now as he continues to grow. So, yeah. David, I talked to Sean earlier, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it is amazing that, you know, the Mikko Rantanen, and all of a sudden people are souring on him after he was injured coming off the Olympics. But, you know, one of the things we talked about, I think all three teams won that trade. So it's okay for that to happen. But, you know, obviously a healthy Mikko Rantanen would certainly help this Stars team a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, like, are we thinking that there is good, like the winner is going to be revealed in time? Because, you know, there's a good chance like Colorado and Carolina are going to be in the finals. Is that going to seal the deal on who won the trade?
No. I mean, I think if you last year rewind a year, and if you were Carolina and you were Colorado and you were watching the Dallas Stars, you say we got the worst of that trade. It's going to change from year to year. And that's just the reality. And that's why I think all three teams fared well in this. A change of scenery for multiple players. And that's okay. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
And by the way, so real quick, I agree with you. I just think that it's the standards are a little bit different when you're talking about three genuine cup contenders.
Yes. Yes, that is a great point.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in 4 fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas, to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grunes. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co. Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
Speaking of great players, one of the reasons that we love having you on is the deep dives that you do analytic-wise. And you tweeted out and you wrote about it on your Star Stack. Jason Robertson's next contract predicted at 8 years, $12.4 million per the Twins model, a forward making slightly more than the other $12 million wingers like Mitch Marner Connor, meaning Kyle Connor, who Robertson is slightly better than, is a good deal in your opinion. So you are pro Robertson. Get it done. Pay him over the Mikko Rantanen mark just a slight bit at 12.4.
Yeah, I understand the impulse, right? Like, I feel like the impulse for a lot of fans is that, well, you can't run it back. And maybe they see some similarities with Toronto, for example, right? Toronto was a team that they had their core. They kept making the playoffs and it didn't matter. And they kept running it back, kept running it back. However, there was a difference, right? The key difference is that that team couldn't make it out of the first round. Also, Toronto, which never had a true number one defender, Dallas does. Toronto for the longest time didn't have a genuine starting goaltender. Dallas does, although there are some asterisks. We don't have to get into the Jake Ottinger discussion just yet, but he is their starter. He is the number one goaltender, and I don't think there's any dispute in that. And so the point is, like, when I look at all of the, you know, when you think about kind of the concept of running it back, I think a lot of this kind of stems from, like, darn, we didn't win the cup. That's very different than, like, your team is really just, like, not good enough and is built deficiently like the Toronto Maple Leafs. The irony being that, like, well, the last year before they did break up the core, they took the eventual Stanley Cup winners to 7 games, right? And then what happened? You got rid of Mitch Marner, a really fantastic winger, two-way winger. That's the important part, a two-way winger, Gavin. Yeah. A two-way winger, played big minutes, really important from shift to shift. And what did Toronto turn into once they lost him?
Yeah.
Like a tanking team. Like, not even a team that might have, like, could have made the playoffs if they just, like, didn't have as many injuries. No. This was a bottom five team. And they just won the first round pick, right? The first overall. And so I'm like, does that not sound familiar? Now, yes, Marner plays on the PK. Robertson doesn't, even though I think he should be tried there. Neither here nor there. But does that not sound familiar? Does, you know,
it, yeah, I completely agree. It sounds very familiar. And what I put a lot of stock into, David, is Jason Robertson already had good starts going into this year. I felt he really improved in other areas as a player. I thought his forechecking was very impressive. I thought he was more physical. I thought he fought his way into the dirty area in front of the net. He's not afraid to do that. I just saw a lot of things from Jason Robertson I'm not saying that I hadn't seen him in years past, but you know, one of the things you continue to point out is his how underrated he is as a two-way forward.
Yeah, it's something that so in my piece, I think one of the and I realize like you know, I've always kind of like tried to kind of be clear about you know what I think the numbers are kind of saying, and that I think just because a defender does or just because a player doesn't defend in a way that maybe we're kind of like used to doesn't mean that the end result is not the same. I mean, you know, nobody is saying that, for example, Robertson is Patrice Bergeron, but when his defensive metrics are comparable to like Joel Eriksson Ek and Yanni Gourde and Sean Couturier, and you don't see any other winger that produce or any of the forward that produces at the level Robertson does in some of these comparisons, in some of these numbers, at minimum, you have to start question or asking yourself, well, am I just not noticing that? Is there something in this game that maybe I don't appreciate or maybe I don't focus on? And I, even then, like, I think you see this a lot in Robertson's never going to be able to kind of like back check the way that Bergeron does because he doesn't have the speed. But, you know, when I like go back and watch tape and I rewatch the series because I've kind of been doing some autopsy reports, like, you know, why Dallas's defense didn't hold up. Looking back at Maverick Bork, who I think was fantastic. One of the things that you kind of see pretty consistently is that Robertson, I think his active defense is quite good. It's something that kind of maybe wasn't as honed as it was in years past, which is maybe like, I think a good sign for people looking at Wyatt Johnson, because we've always assumed he'll take the next step because he plays responsibly, but it's never really shown up in the numbers. Right. So I think you look at that and you also look at the way he plays offensively that I think also affects the how much he limits himself and the team from playing defense. Like Alex Tuch has been a great counterexample. Like if you watch Alex Tuch in these playoffs, really great on the rush, fast, big dude, looks the part, seems to play the part. But every time he's coming down the down his lane, he's taken this like sharp angle shot that hits the boards and tees up the opponent for a counter rush.
Mm-hmm.
Robertson never does that. And that's important. Like it's important that, you know, when like a really a gifted offensive player is not just pressuring the opponent, but also being smart about that pressure. And Tuch is a great example how if you are not smart about your offense, if you're not creative, if you're not able to extend those shifts and look for the best option as opposed to just spamming the net, then that can become offense going the other way. Robertson never, ever does that. And I felt like that, I mean, to me, Alex Tuch being on the top line really, I think, hurt them in the Montreal series. And sure enough, like Lindy Ruff, too little too late, but eventually took him off that top line. But I think there's just so many layers to Robertson's game that don't go appreciated just because, you know, he isn't able to blow up a guy and you know, center ice or, you know, run like a hacky podcast. Like, I mean, to me, Robertson really is, I think he really is the truth. That doesn't mean I feel like there's just no such thing as a, you know, not that we're going to get into like trade talk, cause you know, that's not something you want to do. And like, I don't really want to do that either, but
yeah.
To me, it's – I guess think about it this way, and I'll ask you this question. That way we can bring you into this conversation. This is not the David Castillo show. Come on, man. This is Spits and Stills, I think was the art. the potential rebranding. Who is, in your opinion, not the best forward, Gavin, but the most important forward? And this is not necessarily rhetorical. Just because we're talking about Robertson doesn't have to be rhetorical. But who is the most important forward to the Dallas Stars?
Mikko Rantanen.
Okay, why is that?
I feel as though when Mikko Rantanen's on the ice, healthy and playing his game, he opens up space for others. In other words, that bumper position is not as tightly covered because you cannot leave Mikko Rantanen open in the slot. So I think he does a lot of things that need to be accounted for by teams that a lot of players don't necessarily, and that opens up other players on the ice. And when called upon, he certainly puts up the, I mean, he's a 100+ point player a year. So I think he does a lot of things. And I like his aggression at times as well. I mean, it can get a little overzealous with time in the penalty box. And I'm hoping that that's cut down next year. But those are the reasons that I feel, you know, he's best. His passing ability is amazing. You know, wherever he is on the ice. So I just think he's an elite player. And probably a close second would be Wyatt Johnston. Does everything right. Great scoring ability, great touch, good defensive player, really good up the middle. So that would be my second.
So Robertson is the third best forward in your, or third most important forward in your opinion.
I would say so.
See, and I would just disagree completely. Like I, to me, and this is why I asked, use the word that I did, because I think there is a distinction between best forward and most important. I agree with you. I think in a vacuum, if you want to argue that Rantanen is the best forward, I think he totally has a case, right? I mean, there's just no substitute for a third period hat trick to seal a series. But to me, when I think of most important forward, I think of not necessarily the greatest advantage that Dallas can leverage, but the player that can forge, I think, the greatest relate, basically the player that I think can raise the team's floor as much as their ceiling. And I feel like Rantanen's floor is actually quite bad. Like his floor is taken, you know, a silly penalty, not just a penalty, but like, you know, the kind of penalties we don't like, even us as Stars fans don't want to see in the game, you know, like that hit on Coronado. Also Rantanen is not a good defensive forward. I would say the same with Johnston. Johnston, I think he's developing into that. He's not there yet. And we saw that this year on the ice, right? I mean, the line that struggled the most was the Johnston-Rantanen pair. And that's because, yes, partly because, well, Rantanen had to recover from, like, you know, an MCL tear, but also because they don't defend well. And I think Johnston can develop into that, but as is, Dallas needs to worry about finding those two the right partner. Dallas doesn't need to worry about finding Robertson the right partner because he's going to raise the floor of whoever he's playing with while still maintaining a high ceiling. And I think, to me, that combo is unbeatable. And that's why I feel like Robertson, in my opinion, is Dallas's most important forward. Sure, probably not the guy you can expect to, you know, score the goal in like the last 10 seconds. And the only guy you can trust to shoot the puck is between Robertson, Johnston, and Rantanen. But over the course of 60 minutes, I feel like Robertson just is, I think he's got it all. The aesthetic may not match, but he's got it all.
I feel like we should have started with this rather than talk about Vancouver head coaching vacancy. Why'd you do that?
You know, if you had called the show Spits and Suds, you know, or Spits and Suds, oh my God, I'm like, it's,
yeah,
Spits and Stills is what I was going with.
You appear on so many podcasts, you can't even get the name right. That's, it's okay. it's okay. Okay. You're right. I don't want to talk trade scenarios, but
you do want to talk trade scenarios.
Well, one of our Spits and Sudsies threw something out and it got me thinking.
All right, let's go.
All right. San Jose gives you the number 2 and number 20 pick for Jason Robertson.
No. You know, okay. I don't think that's so real quick, chew on this while I kind of talk about that. Which is that I offered, because I feel like there are other players on this team who could relieve cap while also being able to potentially make a lateral move. And I think that's someone like Thomas Harley, who I went on Dimitri's Discord and conversed and did some idiotic trade scenarios with some San Jose fans who actually like
who Dimitri is first.
Dmitry Filipovich for the PDO yes. podcast.
Yes.
And offered them Thomas Harley for Sam Dickinson, also a left-hand defenseman, Colin Graf, and San Jose's 2026 second rounder this season. They said yes. Chew on that real quick. We can talk about that one, or we can ignore it. But getting back to the offer, I think the reason why I say no is that, for one, San Jose is not interested in a four. That's why I offered Thomas Harley to San Jose, because I thought that made sense. Like, that's a team that really needs – in fact, they need a whole blue line, right? Like, I think their entire decor, except for maybe one guy, is UFA. But the way that San Jose is built, if you look at not just the obvious talents, like Will Smith, obviously Celebrini, but their prospects, like Chernyshov, Philip Bystedt is a guy that looks really good. I don't think that's a team that's really interested in kind of adding forwards, and therefore I don't think it's a team that, yes, of course, you know, they're going to be interested in Robertson for obvious reasons, but nonetheless, for me, the main thing is that in this draft, right, it could go a number of different ways. And so if you're looking at the second round pick as somebody that could replace Robertson, even if it's Gavin McKenna, McKenna's not that guy. McKenna is, I think, I love his game, but there is definitely some risk there, more so than in previous years. And so if that happens, if they don't go, you know, if McKenna drops down, that's a risk. If they take McKenna and you get someone like Chase Reed, who's one of the best defenders in the draft, the defenders like in this draft are kind of all like, there's like six or seven of them that are all in this little bucket that in no way resembles like the year when it was like Hughes and, you know, Hughes at the top. And then right. you had like Bouchard and Dobson. Like, this is not that group. So Chase Reed, Albert Smits, Carson Carrolls, Daxon Rudolph, who I think is like a huge red flag. I don't like him personally, but anyways. Keaton Verhoeve. Like, this is not the group to make that move. I think if there was another draft, yes, I think you consider it, but it's not, so don't.
I think that's very fair. The only reason I was thinking it, if negotiations break down, but I have the feeling that then if they broke down, Robertson might just play on his qualifying offer.
And real quick, I would just to add one more thing. I do like the concept. I don't want to like minimize, because I think the only way that a Robertson trade works is if you completely like strip the money out of it. Like, if you give yourself pretty much all of his contract and you're taking on like an entry level contributor, the same way Carolina took on Stankoven and a bunch of assets. Like, that's the trade that you can potentially win, because we saw how Carolina won with it. Granted, it yeah. involved a lot of other moves, like assets to eventually trade for Keandre Miller, fantastic, and also money for Nikolaj Ehlers. But I like that wavelength. That, to me, that's way more sensible than like a one-for-one, where it's like trading Robertson for a dude that people maybe think is comparable but actually isn't. And you don't really give yourself the cap relief that you would need to add something else to make enough of an impact to offset that. Like, yeah. So I like that wavelength. I like where that person is headed.
This was a healthy discussion. As always, David, tell us what you have coming up on your Substack. That's called Star Stack, or are you doing anything with D Magazine?
That's it, man. That's all the time we got.
Well,
I'm sorry. Should I have waited to ask that? Should I have asked that afterwards?
Yeah, I think that's usually it's 45 minutes, David.
Okay. All right. Time flies, man. It's Gavin hanging out with Gavin.
No, I have, unless you have another topic that you want to bring to the table, then we can certainly do that, David. But those are my questions that I came up with to talk to you about today.
Not a whole. So with Star Stack, I will be writing about, it's so fitting that we had this discussion today. I will be writing about the only trade scenario involving Jason Robertson that could or should be entertained. So, yes, I'm very pro Robertson. He should not be traded. under any reasonable circumstance. But if there are unreasonable circumstances, then we can maybe entertain that. But so look out for that stuff at StarStack. It's the only other Robertson piece I'm going to write that involves the trade shenanigans, because otherwise not really big into, you know, a lot of the theory crafting that we tend to get. And so look out for that. Also, I will have a preview at Sticks and Salvos of the Avalanche versus Knights. That'll be tomorrow morning at 8:30. And then the morning after that, I'll also have a preview for the Hurricanes and Canadiens series. And of course, I'll continue. Like I said, I'm going to do some film room work on Maverick Bourque in the playoffs, because I thought he was fantastic. And so, yeah, just nothing for D Magazine yet, but probably next month.
Well, I'll end on this then. One of the things I did talk to Sean about, and it is interesting, and this is really the first year I've seen it. It might be an anomaly, David, but granted, they're all playing well right now, but no marquee goaltenders in the final four. And it's interesting that these teams like Colorado using two goaltenders in a series. I wonder if this is a trend or if this is just for this year.
Well, I mean, it's Prashant Iyer, who is a fantastic Detroit writer, won't hold it against him that he's a Red Wings fan, because he's just a brilliant dude, super analytics nerd, right? He did some pretty heavy research into whether or not it is wise to spend a lot of money on goaltending. And the unanimous conclusion was no, it's not. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't win with a number one highly paid goalie, just that in general, it's not a position that you want to overspend on, because it can be so erratic.
Freaky. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the perfect word. And so I think it makes more sense to key in on just kind of, you know, finding that, you know, riding the wave at just the right time. Right. And finding those goaltenders that can kind of give you those streaks. You know, we've seen like how often Colorado has kind of made it work. And so I think that is a sign of things to come. And that's not to say Dallas and, you know, teams like Dallas and Boston need to necessarily have buyer's remorse. You know, you look even like Florida, right? You know, Sergei Bobrovsky has a massive contract. They, you know, ended up winning two cups, but I also think those are anomalies. And it's one of the reasons why the Robertson trade stuff bothers me. I'm like, dude, there are like three players that I would give up before Robertson who I think are not near as valuable in proportion to position that Robertson is. And so I don't know why Robertson has made the fall guy when I would much rather give up more than a few contracts. We don't need to name names.
But I understand what you're saying. It is fascinating, you know, similar to for a long time, the running back position was not as important in the NFL, and multiple backs getting the job done. Now it seems as though we are trending back to the running backs having importance if they are of that, you know, elite magnitude. So I just like looking at trends, and I just noticed that this year. And all four, four to five goalies, they're playing really well right now. So it's not like we're not seeing, you know, quality goaltending. It's just fascinating that the, you know, the names like Hellebuck, Shesterkin, you know, name the goaltenders, Vasilevsky, you know, they're not in it. So it's really interesting. David, as always, my friend, thank you. See, I extended that just for you.
Oh, man. Well, listen, man, no matter what I say, Gavin, I love you. You're the best, and really keep up the inspired work.
Appreciate it, man. Love you back. It's always a great conversation with David Castillo. Let's support David. You can go to his Twitter, David Castillo, where he releases all kinds of information, a great analytics breakdown, and you can support him through his Substack at Stars Stack, as well as his other ventures, D Magazine and more. He has a link tree right on his Twitter page, so you can see all the stuff that David is up to. Special thanks to Gregory Finley, our producer of this fine program, as we continue to push out all kinds of content. here on Spits and Suds. I do want to remind you, please press the subscribe button. Please tell your friends. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, you can always leave us a review and say that you like the guests on Spits and Suds. That helps out as well. We absolutely love providing you with these off-season episodes, but it is really important that you support the on-time experts or you're supporting Spits and Suds so we can grow this thing together. The core purpose when we started this program was to spread the good word about hockey throughout DFW. So proud to say that we're a small portion of that, and we want to continue doing that. Until our next podcast, it's going to happen soon, I promise. Have a great day, everyone.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bearers a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.